Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hamid, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the hosts or hostesses of AM360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Assalamu alaikum. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillah, Rabbi Alameen. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, wahdahu la sharika lah, wa ashhadu anna Muhammadan abduhu wa rasuluh. I greet our beloved listening audience and the greetings of peace. And with Allah's name, the most merciful benefactor, the most merciful redeemer, all praise is due to Allah alone. I greet the listening audience and the peace that Allah gives the world and all human beings who are striving in a way to make a better world. The peace of Assalamu alaikum, may God's peace be upon you. I am Imam Shahid Abdullah, the African Balalian American Griot. We are proud to make the announcement that we are the generation. We are the generation that we've been waiting for. We are the generation that's here to make big changes in the world, in the direction of the world. And as a griot, I write and speak to African Americans about African American culture, or anyone who's willing to hear culture and how we evolved and what we are headed, direction we are headed, and goals we have, and the way that we have been blessed to come into the world and do our part. As an imam under the leadership of Imam Mardi Muhammad and researcher of culture, I have written several books, Success is Automatic, Unleash the Power of Your Industrious Nature and Achieve Your Dream, The River of Gold, and Spirit of Allah, and my latest book is Uncovering the Scheme, Preventing the Evolution of the African American Culture. I think that I thank you all, too, for coming in and listening and to the presentation this evening, and of the consideration about the very important part that we talked about in our last meeting that's very vital to the African-American culture. We have missed by a culture that it did not have our best interests in mind. They didn't have the African-American best interests in mind, nor did they are they totally responsible, but they have some degree of responsibility for the conditions of the world and the African-American people. I believe that when the European brought the African people to colonial America, they had one goal, and that goal was to make a world from the African-American slave, build a world that the world had never seen before, richer and bigger and more powerful. And they would use the labor of the African-American, the African people, to get that particular job done. They used the African people to build homes, to build houses, to build farms and plantations and many, many other aspects to help structure this nation. Everything to develop this. This is what they did in terms of use of African American people. I also believe that when the Europeans were making a slave out of the Africans, Allah was creating a people, a new people, a people that the world had never seen before. And this brings to the point that many of us have heard other African American leaders and who had come to do some good in the situation in America. They came with different philosophies and different ideas, and many of them were very sound, and some of them was not as sound as others, but they had some merit to them. We can go as far back as Frederick Douglass, who, those of you who are aware of Frederick Douglass, you know that he had written several autobiographies, and he had written them at different times in his life. In fact, he is about four or five, and each of those times he saw a different America. America was evolving at the time. Frederick Douglass was coming into his own. As you know, Frederick Douglass started out as a slave on the plantation and made his way off the plantation to became a free man and educated and a writer and speaker, orator, one of the greatest in history. And he had a great striving in his presentation to help the African to get the best out of his life in America that he can possibly get, based on the ideas and concepts he understood that were in the scripture, the scripture of the Christian faith. And he believed that the scripture had something of value. And he also believed that the world that he was watching form at the time he was a Christian was misusing some of the concepts and ideas that he felt was crystal and true in the scripture. But he felt as though the European American who was developing this country, the forefathers of the country who were put together, he felt many of them did not have in mind the essence that the scripture spoke about. He was a true believer in the development of America. He almost that when you read the development of Frederick Douglass, you will find that he was an absolute believer in the concept and development that America could offer the people in the world. He believed in that. And he believed in three maybe different ways. One part of his life, he spoke out very harshly against the treatment the European American had toward the African people, very harshly. And other times he spoke out in a way that he was giving some credence to the idea and concept that America, what it had to offer in its newness, in its birth, in terms of government for people, in terms of putting people in a course that all people could benefit from. So he was growing and evolving. At the same time, America was, let's say, like a flower gives birth. That's what he saw in America. He saw it in different stages. But he offered in his orator, his writings, his understanding, solutions. And many of his solutions we look at today and say, this is a good idea from our ancestor. And many others came after Frederick Douglass with some of the same ideas and same concepts. You find that you had Drew Ali, who came with the concept of the African people would be better off in America if they understood religion. Understood religion in a way that religion could make a person whole and complete. And he had went on different trips to different parts of the world and came back with an understanding about the religion of Al-Islam. And he developed out of his understanding the Moorish Temple. And the Moorish Temple was a combination of religious aspects in addition to the political process that was taking place in America. He formed his group and organization in a way that they became the entity. They were sovereign people, like a sovereign nation within a nation. That's the way he formed his group and organization, because he had that feeling. Now, many times, and many people, as we said before, had different aspirations about America and what the African American people could do in terms of developing in America. Along with that, we find that in more modern day times, we find that Imam Muhammad, who became the leader of the Nation of Islam after the passing of his father, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And he came and gave some enlightenment in terms of religious aspects and enlightenment in terms of the political position that he saw in America and felt as though the America could be a place for a great growth for a people in conjunction with the ideas and concepts of the Quran and religion. He was asked one time, and we sort of went over this last week, but we didn't have the audio together, but he was asked what he meant about the African-American people developing in America a method, a way of thinking of their own. He mentioned several years before the questioner had asked him the question at that present time. And his answer was that, in fact, I am even more strongly holding on that now, and more now than when he mentioned it several years ago. He continued to explain what he meant in terms of holding on to the idea that the African-American should have their own viewpoint. He went on to say how Muslims all over the world need to experience a re-examination of what they saw in Quran and their way of life as it relates to the evolving world, at the modern world, because the world had changed so drastically from the time that the Quran had been revealed. The world had changed. We're talking 1,400 years. We're now flying in planes and going all over. And in fact, they're making trips to the moon, satellites, at least man-made artificial vehicles going to places like the moon and out in space. So things have changed a great deal. So his point was that even those who had a great understanding of the religion of Islam should look at these new things that are going on in the world. And as he continued to explain his position, he came to the point about the African-American specifically. The African-American specifically, he said, that we are a new people. He said the African was brought to America and was recreated. It was given a new life. And what was taken from the African in slavery under the tutelage of masters. He said that God has created in us, talking about the people, African-American people, again. He has created life again out of the slave. He's continued by saying he restored the human life in a human vessel once again. And as he explained this idea about God creating a new people, it shows clearly that his concept is not that the human being was evolving on his own, unassisted by the Creator, but his concept, his points and his comment was directly connected to that it was the Creator who aided the African-American people to evolve out of that condition of slavery. And with that thinking, it's the kind of, I guess one may say, are we endowed with some kind of divinity? Well, no, really more than no other human being. Are we endowed with something special? Well, probably no more than there are other human beings. But the difference is that in certain situations, those who understand religious thinking, that God assists the human being in terms of their growth in certain situations. And the African had been brought to America, stripped of his culture, stripped of his greatness and things that he had done hundreds of years ago. And what he is saying, that position had been restored by God. That position has been restored by God to the degree that the African was a new people, not just the African remade, but a new people with a new voice. He went on to say that the idea of the African people, and he was talking in a sense that he was talking about scientifically speaking, talking about the psychologists and the sociologists and their study, they would come to the same conclusion as he. We are a new people, he expressed. We are definitely a new people on this matter. We didn't exist before. So we are a new people in this earth. We don't think like Africans. We don't think like white people. We think like us. We don't think like others. We don't think like the other aging people or other countries, Arabs. We think like us. And this was so important in this talk that he gave, because those Africans, African Americans, we had passed the stage of being called Africans at this time, but those African Americans who the language he was talking, that recognized what he was saying about the conditions and what he was saying about a new vessel, a new people, who understood that, would come to the conclusion that not only the people are new, now that means new ideas. New direction. That means a new life can spring up from the same people that were once slaves. And this thinking is not the kind of thinking that the average African American, most of them want to sort of integrate with the European American, integrate so much so they themselves as Africans would disappear. They won't be able to see their Africanism anymore. They won't be able to see their difference because they want to appear to be the same as a European. And they almost don't care what type of European they're the same of. They almost do not care if the European is a thief, if the European is a misguided soul. They just want to be with the European American. Many African Americans think like that. I've heard a very intelligent, give him the credit of intelligence, actor who went a little further than just being an actor. He educated himself and did some deep study. But he was arguing the point that he didn't want to be called black. He didn't believe in black holidays, such as that's what we call the black month in February that we have Black History Month. He didn't believe that. He said, "I'm just an American." See, the idea of to be an American, you have to lose your identity. Is not what America is about. But the average African American, no matter how much wealth he gets or how much knowledge he gets, he still believes he has to lose himself, his self-identity, in order to be whole, in order to be complete. and his wholeness and his completeness is that of being European. This is one of the things that we have talked about on many occasions, that we as African Americans have to begin to think differently. And we see our forefathers did. Our forefathers thought a whole lot different than we think today. Our forefathers had no problem with developing themselves. They still was under the spiritual development of what we call and what we found to be in Eastern Western Africa, coming from the western part of Africa and the original state, whereas almost every tribe and every kingdom had these people we call griots. And the griot was what America or what Europe would call a historian, meaning a person that tells their story. And the griot was the same way with the African. The griot told a story of tribes and told a story of families even. They had the history in their memory. Because at that time, there wasn't any writing in terms of literature, but they had it in their memory. And they had to teach generations after generation how to develop this memory, the history of their people would stay alive. So the griot became a very important part of the African culture because without the griot, the people really didn't collectively have a roadmap of their development, a course of action, how they came. They didn't have that without the griot, because the griot kept mental records, births, deaths, marriages, all of the aspects of a tribe. And almost no tribe would be without a griot. And there's no griot really of that time that was without a king or without a ruling class. The griot was somewhat considered royalty because of the value of what they had. And griots, male or female, it wasn't a male position, it was a male or female. And they would marry within, a griot would tend to marry another griot before one who wasn't a griot can continue the tradition. Continue the tradition, so it became a very vital aspect of the development. And it had different names like Jolly and many different names. The griot is a pronunciation of what the Western world would call them. But the purpose of the griot was to was to keep all of that in place. Their role was very, very important because their tribe, their people, had a record of themselves. They could always look back and keeping their direction because of this record, because of the literal record that the griots would keep in their memory for the people to gravitate to. This is one of the things that we sort of lost during slavery. The African-American, when the African was brought to America, they was separated one from another. And they had to develop a new culture, a new society made here in America. And in developing that new culture and that new society, they came away with some very important aspects, but they still didn't develop fully the idea of one who would keep of their development to such a degree that the people then could get a positive identification with themselves. Now, some of the first writers of the African-American culture took place, some Carl B. Woodson and some others even before him wrote about the history of the African people and all of the information together, getting all of the aspects of together, which would give them a way of developing as a people. Now, as slight as that may sound or may not really gravitate to many people or some people, the importance of this. This is so important because It is what causes people to become motivated to the degree that they can better themselves, or they would develop themselves in a way that the tradition would give them that strength to develop. And the traditions would be told by the record keepers, or the keepers of the times. Now, this is one aspect we have to look at, is what African Americans are, regardless of whether they call themselves black, or whether they call themselves Christian, or call themselves Jew or Muslim, whatever. Simple things, like words, simple words that we are bombarded with, the absence of them. We are bombarded with the absence of certain meanings, so much so that our culture is actually falling apart. Now, I've heard one announcer say black culture is that what we see on the street, what they see in coming out of the taverns, the languages they use, and so forth and so on. That's because African Americans have not really gotten to the point of what their forefathers were doing and catching up with their forefathers' direction and their forefathers' idea on building something in America. Today's African American is disconnected. Right? He takes a little bit of black history that the European spreads out there, which is not really a good story of African people, but they give them that education so that education can continue to retard the African American. The African American thought he's black. And he thought that he's black because black does not come from anywhere. There's no country called black. There's no destination. There's no origin. There's no land. We force ourselves to think of the term because this is the way the European has conditioned us to think. Because a culture has to move on certain aspects. One of those aspects in each individual is a concept of dignity. Dignity may seem, it's a small word, not a big word, but it carries a big meaning. It's a state or quality of being worthy of honor and respect. Now, as simple as that sounds, do you know how hard the African American people, even they have money and they have education, try to get the European American to honor them and treat them with respect? Because they in themselves, in their own selves, who they are and what God made them, they don't feel that naturally. They feel like they haven't earned that until the European says, you've earned my respect. You've earned my respect. I honor some of your things that you're doing. You see, in this thinking and way of life, of having dignity, for people to have dignity, is very difficult for people to make progress without dignity. Very, very difficult. Because the dignity is what gives you self-worth. Your self-worth is based on that dignity. And how do you get dignity? Where does it come from? Dignity comes from looking at your culture, looking at your past, seeing the good things that they have developed, seeing what they have done to make themselves a whole people, and you gain this dignity of being part of them. Dignity doesn't come from what you do in your lifetime. No, it comes from what your people have done to reflect on you so that you can have dignity and be born into this idea of dignity. African American people are suffering from. They're suffering from this concept of nobility. They're suffering from this royalty, this feeling of royalty without being approved by the European American. A sense of pride in oneself. or self-respect. That's one of the greatest suffering characteristics of the African American people. Even though many of them walk with their heads up, but it's a struggle. And they walk with their heads up, but they still don't know why. They think it's just in retaliation to the way the European American has been treating them, rather than in a natural, noble position, because they have been created human, and because God has recreated the African in America, a new people with dignity. But we don't get a chance to see that dignity because we are taught about our history through a people who have no really meaning or aspect for the African American people. They still treat the African American as a people who just are here on a time, and just a matter of time before the African people will not be here anymore. You know, there's another term that goes along with that, is a term of value. Value goes, values. This is one of the things that when people have their culture, it's part of their cultural development, because the values are taught to each of us by our parents and by our culture. And values are the individual beliefs that motivates people to act a way, one way or another. They serve as a guide for human behavior. Now, I see how the African American, the women are taking off their clothes, and the men are just as vulgar as the women, and they almost don't even respect the idea that children are watching them. Children are coming behind them, seeing their behavior, and assuming their behavior in a way that the child is going to grow up with that same disrespect for self, because they won't have dignity, they won't have honor and wealth in themselves. See, the parents do that. So these values are taught in a culture. This is one of the main reasons that the European American brought in integration, social integration, because they wanted to stop the development of the African American culture. They wanted to just get rid of it, because the African American culture was developing values, developing dignity. And when you read some of the books and articles from other writers, and even books that I've written, you will find that there was a time in the African-American community when the African-American was building great financial districts, educating themselves, building homes, having a line of grocery stores or food chain going all through America. And the Africans accomplished this feat of getting to be greater than any other growing element or group in America in just 36 years. They did it in 36 years, from the time of 1896 to 1932. The African American had built Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Durham, North Carolina, Atlanta, Georgia, Black Metropolis in Chicago. So Black Chicago, the Black Metropolis in Chicago was so large that it was called a city within a city. New Jersey, they developed and chartered a town in New Jersey, alongside New Jersey. Chartered a town Florida, Baltimore, North Carolina, this has been the aspect of the African people that's left out of the history. And they consciously left out. We see now there's a governor in Florida who's doing his best, doing his best that he can do to keep African culture, literature, understanding, and development of our people out of the school system. He's not by himself. Don't think for a moment when you see these things on TV and radio and places of that nature that the people who are doing it are by themselves. No, they have a great force behind them. This is why they're doing these things. But we have to be able to reach back into this period of time when the African Americans were flourishing and grab that spiritual development that was taking place then and that idea and let it germinate in us that it creates this aura of dignity and values of life that attitudes can see the meaningful direction that our people should take in the future without having the European tell us which way to go, how to go. Our four importance of educating themselves, they understood the importance of taking care of themselves, and that's something we must get to our young folks of today. Every parent should know that it is their responsibility to teach their children values. It is their responsibility to give their children the kind of life that will bring dignity to them. This dignity and having values in life would change a child. Direction in life to be more positive than negative. It will reflect in their belief system. It will reflect in their knowledge. It will reflect in their attitudes. But the responsibility is the parents. Don't think that the school's responsibility, even though they refuse to teach African-American culture in these schools or in the one that's in these schools, I won't say just one because there's many of them that are doing it, and that's just publicly putting it out. They refuse to do it, but we still can't leave that task on the school system. Even if you live in an area where you have a good school system, the responsibility of teaching your child the values in life that bring the human being dignity is totally on the parents. You can't work so much that you can't teach your child. You can't be so busy that you can't teach your child these important values. Teach them their role in life. Every child should know its role in life, especially if it's a male or female. There shouldn't be no confusion with that. Regardless of what the world is doing, there should be no confusion with that. And if the parents don't know how these things evolve, then the parents must do some research on their own. They must do some research on their own. And that research would be rewarded. And then they will be able to give their children the kind of life, not just lifestyle, but the kind of life with values that will cause them to grow in a way that they can preserve life. You know, you see so much today in the world where young people don't know where they're, what sex are, what sex they want to be. And they think that God created them with that confusion. And the parent should tell the child from birth, you are what God created you. Now, what you want to make yourself out of is another thing. But God created exactly what he wanted each of us to be. In the overwhelming majority. Now, we understand that there's some situation that come about, but in the overwhelming majority, everyone understands at birth they have either the male or female development in which to procreate, or that's the concept, procreation. We are given this idea of male and female for procreation, not just for pleasure, but for procreation. And that procreation is what causes the human being to continue to develop. With that, I want to, any of you have questions or any questions at all, you can raise your hand by pushing the one on your phone, and we can answer. We'll take a few minutes to answer some questions, and then we're going to go and take a break, and then we'll come right back to continue our presentation for this evening. I don't see any hands up, so let's take a quick break with
God's peace be upon you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you, the one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarship, the Learning Lair, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute, the bookstore. May we share completely humanity in spirit and in form, from thought to action. God's peace, God's love, God's compassion. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. Yes, we're back. What I want to do is continue the thought on this idea of parenting, taking charge of their life and the life of their child. This is something you don't have to worry about in terms of governmental. We're not talking about beating children. We're not talking about that. We're talking about teaching children. Teaching children, because you are their first teacher. As a parent, you are the child's first teacher. And the first thing you should teach a child, you should teach a child values. Once they learn values on what to do and how to do different things, then they become automatically start to strive toward human excellence. Because they have a concept. They have an idea of how you do particular things. Now, I imagine that most parents teach their children values at any rate, but the reality shows, according to the facts and the evidence that we see in the streets and in the world, that this idea of teaching children values is not holding up, because they're not doing it. This world has made the parents so busy, busy with two and three jobs and busy trying to look elegant, they look great, busy their selfies and all those kinds of things, that the child is learning on his own and is picking up whatever they could grab to be part of itself. What we have to remember is that a child is like very new, and their mind is special. their eyes, their ears, their nose. All this takes in life like a sponge. They learn every move you make. They learn from every move your friends make. They learn all of these things, and they're also learning from this from what we give them with these machines, this videos, and all those things. They're learning from them. So they're being disarmed before they become old enough to arm themselves intellectually, mentally, and morally. They've been disarmed morally at a very young age because the parent doesn't give them the value they need to arm themselves. And they give them these other things with their babysitters, these games to play, and the computers and things of that nature. Those are not teaching values. They don't even claim to teach values. They claim to teach whatever they feel like they want to teach and to whoever they would listen or look. Parents' responsibility, whether it is looking at a computer, looking at science, the parents' responsibility is to teach the child values. And we have to learn what values are. Values are individual beliefs that motivate people to act one way or another. Values are individual beliefs that motivate people to act one way or another. You see, you can go one way or another. You can go up or down, good or bad. And if you don't have values, then that concept is up for grabs. That whoever can influence someone the most can get them in their direction. Values denote a degree of importance, some things or actions that are aimed with determining which actions are best to do or what way is best to live, significance, and the difference of those actions. They have to be able to do that once they become adults. And if they're not trained while they're young on how to use these values, we can't blame them for their attitudes because they're coming at their attitude, getting their attitude from hook or crook. Sure, we know that the parents are doing the best they can, unless the parents are doing a job. Because we're not doing the best we can. We're doing a job, and we don't know why we are not doing the job that's necessary for the child to grow into the kind of individual who can look at their way of action, which way to go, make their own decisions, and have a moral conviction on which decisions are best. Every parent should know the history of the country that they live in. Every parent should know not only the history of the country they live in, the philosophy of that that's being taught in that country. Do you know that the philosophy of education in America carries with it the concept that goes as far back as Greece, the Greek civilization? When the Greek civilization came into existence, they were warriors. And they did everything relevant to war. They even didn't want men to have more than one family because they wanted to spend more time in the army and wanted to give more money to the army. So they created this idea of monogamy. Greece created the idea not for the good of the people, but for the good of the city or the state. They wanted the state to be stronger. And in doing so, what they also instituted and promoted, this high degree of homosexuality. Because, you know, when two men have sex with one another, they can't produce children. So there's no family. They create this idea of men being almost honored for going with other men. The kings and the rulers of always are known to have male, not servants, but companions. Socrates was a great philosopher. He also was known for that, the idea of having a male companion. Because it was prevalent in ancient Greece. And they took these ideas, and when Rome became the ruler of the Western world, they brought the Greek ideas into the Roman develop. And as the Romans developed, they took on the religion of Catholicism. And the churches found that they could control the people much better if they used the ideas and concepts that was in the Roman Empire. So they became the Roman Empire, then became, that's when they adopted Christianity. And then the churches used the Roman concepts and ideas to create a following. And they commanded them like a military. They had their ways, and they then begin to practice those ideas of male and being part of female. You have this whole concept coming up of nuns. Then you had this whole concept coming up of priests. Ideas of men not being with women and women not being with men. But they be with each other, and it's just a matter of time before the natural development for intimate relationship come into existence. So now, with this as the history of the European, it's not just this form of democracy. They claim the Greeks were the first to practice a democracy in terms of the state. Sure, they had some ideas, but this the thing that hurt the Western world more than anything, because democracy was on the way anyway, the one we use today. But what hurts us more than anything else is this idea that men should be with men and women with women. Not only is that bad for the social development for the human being, it's bad for the human being and totally. If the world followed that practice, the idea of extinction will become very relevant. The idea of extinction will become irrelevant simply because men and women, separate from one another, cannot produce children. They have to come together to produce children. So you can see how that idea of what they call homosexuality is not connected to anything divine. It's connected to political movements. And one might look at it as a way, since it's against human development, humanity development, as a way of what they would call population control, you almost are leaning to say it's a satanic thinking to rid man of being on this earth. An attempt to do that. And it's that kind of philosophy that we are dealing with in America today. We're dealing with that same kind of philosophy that came through the ancient Romans, or the ancient Greeks to the ancient Romans, into Europe. Now it is spread into the world through Catholicism, through the Christians. Not all Christians, don't We don't want to misunderstand that, because we have many Christians who don't believe in such a thing as that. You have the Mormons. You have other Christian beliefs that don't accept that idea. But that idea not only affects what we might call those who are Christian in terms of whether they go to church or not, it affects those who may not go to church at all. Because if they see that this is okay, they may think the temptation they have is an inclination. And being have a temptation for something is not an inclination for something. They're two different things. But when a person doesn't understand that, and they are tempted to experiment on something or anything of that nature, they confuse that with inclination, that they are inclined to. That's not the makeup. Man is inclined to multiply, be fruit and multiply, men and women together. That's the inclination. That's the inclination. And when we look at these things and see what's in the world today, we get an idea of what the African-American people are up against. We get an idea of what the African-American people are up against. We're not up against the idea of we're not making enough money, or we don't have enough jobs. Not even so much as education, because we can get an education on science and chemistry and that type of educating, even psychology and philosophy and things of that nature. But it's the African American is up against primarily are the values. What values are we teaching our children? Because they're definitely going to become confronted with the variations of lifestyles that are in the world. I remember when I was a young person, these things that are out here now didn't exist. But someone could have said to my parents that, you know, go come a day when your child or your children are going to be confronted with ideas that they may not be able to handle unless you give them some strength to deal with that now. Fortunately, for most of this generation that I'm in, our parents were steadfast in terms of what a child should do or not do, what was appropriate, what was not appropriate. There was a generation when you wasn't just parented by your immediate mother and father. You was parented by whoever was in your community, whatever adult was in your community. They protected the children. They marshaled the children to wrong and right. It was a better atmosphere to raise children. Now, nothing strange has happened other than the fact that we have gotten away from values. And I'm not saying we in that same generational idea of people who were raised back when parents were looking after their children, but there's a mid-term generation here who was missed by the generation. The generation that I'm a part of primarily, let's say between 60 and 90, 80, 90, they primarily took a swing at the apple, almost without having a complete understanding of what apple they was after. There's a lot of misinformation in terms of what the belief systems during that time. But is that generation following them that could change the whole makeup? That generation that follows that generation can begin to re-educate their children and grandchildren to values. to understand the importance of reproduction and the importance of being responsible for that reproduction. No one is going to teach them these things except us. And we are the generation to make this known and prevalent to our people. They are still very busy being distracted by the European American. The European American let them play baseball now. The European American let them play football, let them dance on stages, let them come in the restaurants, let them come amongst them. So they're very, very attracted to that world that doesn't speak or address the building of their own world, of their own culture. But it allows them to be able to negate their culture, leave their culture alone, and go into another culture that is not for the benefit of their people. So it's very, very important that we as African Americans begin to look into what it takes for us to change the direction of our people to a direction that's not only more profitable, but it preserves us. Because the direction we are in now is the same direction that's about population control. Population control is the direction that the world has gotten into by the leaders of the world to control the populations all over the world so that they can have more of an advantage of taking care and taking the goods and the which they can use of the earth to their advantage and to their growth. This is not just a exercise in private enterprise or exercise in sports or exercise in food, and not just that kind of exercise. No, this is a direct attempt to cut down the populations of the world. And in that movement, the ones that will go down first are the ones who have less knowledge on how to preserve themselves. And that's one of the places that the African American is in. The others who are aware of this, who are aware of doing something in relationship, maintaining their people generation after generation, they don't get all hung up in this concept about generational wealth, because they know generational wealth don't mean anything if your generations are not here. Then whoever's here going to use that wealth? We see the African American people; they are pretty much marrying outside of their race, and they say, "Well, anybody can love anything." Well, that may be true too, but the fact of the matter is that preservation, self-preservation, is the first law of nature. And then the same law says that the people must reproduce at a particular rate in order for that particular people, that particular group, to remain a group that moves into the future generation after generation. And the scientists know what it is. They know it's called a sub-replacement fertility rate. The sub-replacement fertility rate is simply saying that there's a rate that a group of people, whether it be an ethnic group or whether it be a religious group or whether it be a racial group, a group of people, in order for that group of people to continue into the future, generation after generations, biologically speaking, and culturally speaking, but biologically specifically, they must have children at a rate of two children, 2.1 child per female of that particular species. And the children have to live to age 15. Now, that's a law in the creation. Now, if they do not do that, then they disappear. Like many of you know, those of you who read scripture, your Bible or the Quran, whatever you read, and those who go through history and look at what happened with the Native American, you understand, or at least you see it happen in reality, that extinction is definitely possible. Definitely possible. Definitely possible and on the rise. We have so many times mentioned what happened to the Native American, how they've been exterminated and still being exterminated today, becoming extinct. Just a matter of time. We as African Americans, if we don't take heed, someone will be saying the same thing about us that we're saying about the Native American. Someone will be saying the same thing. They had an opportunity. You remember in your script, in your Bibles, that where the Nineveh, or the Sodom and Gomorrah, all the town, where people existed, when they were off course, they all had a messenger or someone amongst them who understood what was going on and gave them a word on how to get out of that situation. Now, I know a lot of people may not believe that God is always present. They may not believe that God of Moses is the same God today. They may not believe that the God of Esau or Muhammad is the same God today. They think that he's off. He's not a God man. No, it's the reality is God guides man all the time. He guides you. He guides me. There's not a day that goes by that God does not guide us. The most important thing is that do we listen to that guidance, and do we not only listen to it, do we put it into action? Guidance is of no benefit if we don't put it into action. It's just something we put on the shelf. It's just something we can hang or a sticker we could put on our chest. But we get guidance every day. Allah has created, God has created man to be able to look at the earth and look at the creation and see the direction he can take in this creation to benefit himself. He gave man that power. That's guidance. Then he's given man the power to make provisions to keep things of harm from coming to himself. That's guidance. Person say, oh, I got an idea. No, that's guidance. These ideas that people come up with, how to build a light bulb, how to put together an automobile, or how to transplant hearts, or how to help a person cross the street, or how to help a homeless person out. These ideas and concepts come directly from the Creator. This is His creation. There's no other Creator. There's only one God, and He's the God of the whole creation. So every part of the creation, every blade of grass, every bird that flies, every man that thinks, every creature that crawls is guided by that Creator. And he's also warned by that Creator and given instructions on how to better his life by that Creator. Now, this is a situation that one might say, oh, that's a religion. Everything is about. Do you think the scientists like Pasteur and all these other scientists didn't believe in a Creator? No, they believed in a Creator. That's who they called on. We want to take a pause to any comments or questions before we close out today. And I want to also go to another announcement. So if any of you have any questions, just raise your right hand or raise your hand at us, by pushing the one on your phone, and we can talk about that question. Well, meanwhile, we'll take another short pause and
God's peace be upon you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you, the one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarship, the Learning Lab, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute, the bookstore. May we share completely humanity in spirit and in form, from thought to action. God's peace, God's love, God's compassion. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. Okay, we are back. So if you have any questions, we're going to be signing off just a moment or two. And I want to leave you with this important part. And I want to sort of bring our talk today to a close, and with the important role that we have as people, and especially as this generation. We have a job to do as a generation in this particular time. We just have to be able to see what it is, and God blesses us to be able to see. Some of us see and be able to relate to what we see to others, and we can utilize that to really develop what we have to do in order to be a better situation. So what we'd like to do is remind all of us that we have an opportunity. I love so much what Imam Muhammad said in about culture. He raised a point about culture. That we have to be able to preserve our culture. I want to mention this before we go off the air, too, that this idea of slavery having such an impact on our lives that it causes us the problems we have today. I just want to mention that I know a lot of good researchers have done a lot of work on that idea and that idea to its fullness. But what happened on slavery is twofold. The idea that we have been made a new people is one thing. The other is the trouble that was brought to our people is another thing. Those two things have to be weighed and observed. But the idea of the syndromes that are left over from slavery, we have to take not just a closer look at, we have to be able to look at what really happened after slavery. I was listening to Thomas Sowell, and he's a economist. He talks about systems and how they operate and so forth throughout time and throughout the world. And one of the points he made a point that after slavery, the African Americans began to make progress. He said, in fact, he pointed out the relationship between the progress we made during that time and what's happening in this, what we call this particular integration concept that's going on now. We had almost 70% of all the children in those families of that time had two parents in their homes. Today it's like 30%, talking about the African-American people. Some say it's 20%. But the point is that economically, we were doing well economically. All of the statistics point to this direction. So it's proof that it's just a matter of how we are thinking and how we are educating ourselves as to our progress and how we can make a great deal more progress than we are making. It's not just what happened during slavery, which is holding us back. We have to take the what they call it, the horse by the reins, or reins. We have to take hold of the reins, and we have to take charge of our own abilities, capitalize on the human capital that's within each of us. And once we start thinking this positive direction, we can continue with our growth. And what I so like so much about what Imam Muhammad said on the 20th of February 2000, he was talking in the Eastern Carolina University North Carolina, where he on the subject of blacks need a cultural home. And he said that we should build our own diversity on our own diversity. He's letting us understand that every human being is different. And we get hung up in this idea that the European American slide on us, all people are the same, while they are creating a different environment for themselves. Everybody is different. He said we should create our own diversity. Don't give up, brother, your work of building your own identity as a black man or as an African American. Don't give that up. Keep on working on it. Now, that in itself was very, very powerful. And this is like what, 2023. We're talking what, 20-some years ago. We should ingest this thinking. We have, don't be afraid to think of us as unique. Don't be afraid to think of ourselves as being created unique to contribute to world growth. Not take away from, but to contribute to world growth. And this would cause our children and children's children to feel more positive about their direction. They won't feel as they're being going down a dead-end street. They will feel more or less as they're making progress. And that progress is because of the way we think and the way we educate them. The job we have is to educate our children, and is not to give them a send off a certain amount of money and send them off. No, we have to show them the realities of what we can understand, and use that to give them a better life, a better source of life, and a better way of understanding life. It's not as difficult as it may seem. Is only made to be difficult by others who don't want us to be successful, who are not interested in our goals and objectives to get what they have in terms of something for our own dignity, our own self-worth. See, that is the cause of dignity, self-worth. When we have our own self-worth, that's dignity. And that is the key and development on which we all should be traveling. That's the road we should be on. And we should encourage other African Americans to be on that same road. And let's not get too hung up on, well, that brother is a Christian, or that brother is a Muslim, or that brother is a black Israelite. We don't want to talk about dignity with them. No, we all are African American. We all came over here and went through the same experience. And what we have to do is look at the purpose that this is for and what it offers us as a people. We all have the willing, we all are willing to believe in the way we want to believe in religion. And most African Americans believe in a deity. We're not out here, most African Americans not out here with devil worship and all those kinds of things. That's not prevalent in our community. Most of us believe in a deity one way or another. We believe there's a God, a creator. So we shouldn't spend more time staying apart than we should spend coming together. We should spend more time collaborating on how we can benefit ourselves and our children in the future than we spend apart from one another. We will be able to grow much faster and better for our youth, and they will have a future if we work together. They will have a plan if we work together. It's only our time. We should be able to look at that time and spend it putting together the African-American community or culture that our foreparents developed. And in one of our next broadcasts, we're going to talk about that, on how we came to be African-American and how it's the actual facts that are out there. We're going to have all the proof on what you have the opportunity to believe in something real. So with that, I also want to remind you, too, that we have another program coming up following this program. And we want you all to tune in. It'll be in just a few minutes about a courtship and marriage. It'd be just about five to 10 minutes. So be sure to tune in. I greet you all in the greetings of peace. Assalamu alaikum.
God's peace be upon you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you, the one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarship, the Learning Lab, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute, the bookstore. May we share completely humanity in spirit and in form, from thought to action. God's peace, God's love, God's compassion. Assalamu alaikum.